I think that it is about 7 years at least that I have been talking Hoshana Rabbanai about the Ushpizin. For all the years I've been talking about the message that's imparted to us by Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov. Tonight it's going to be a little different, and it's going to be dedicated first and foremost to David. David, do you know that tonight the Ushpizin is David? In the sukkah, we should have said, and I'll try and do it when I get home, I hope I'll remember, B'motumino David, Ushpizi Eloi, please, may it please you, David, the guest, the Yasi Imi V'imach Kol Ushpizi Eloi, to sit together with all of our other exalted guests, Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, and Aaron. Truth is, we're going to talk tonight about Moshe and David. David and Moshe. And I think the first shiur of all things, the first shiur was 7 years ago, Shemitah, the year 2000. It was a Shemitah year. But we weren't talking about Shemitah then. It was the beginning of the second Intifada. They were extremely, extremely difficult days for Klal Yisrael. So what's new, you understand? What's new in 7 years? Extremely difficult days. And I remember that night, I remember especially because that afternoon, there were a number of hikers who were being pinned down by enemy fire on Mount Ebal. And when I came home after the shiur here, I listened to the 11 o'clock news, and they announced that a Jew by the name of Rav Binyamin Herling had been killed on Har Ebal. My wife heard a gasp that came from me. Earlier that week, I had met this gentleman, Rav Binyamin Herling, for the very first time. Where did I meet him? At a meeting in the sukkah of Rav Avram Shapira Zeichet Tzadik Levrach, the great loss of this Yom Tov to Klal Yisrael. I was there at many meetings in his house. It was a meeting about the importance of saving Eretz Yisrael. And then I find out, this gentleman, I remember I went over after the meeting and I said, "Who are you?" He spoke with such passion and love about Eretz Yisrael. I was so impressed. And then two, three days later, Hoshana Rabbah at night, he was killed on Har Ebal. All right. What do I want with David? And what do I want with Moshe? So I'll tell you what I want with them. There's a Gemara. And in part, this year is going to be based on an amazing drosha, an essay by Rav Moshe Avigdor Amiel, who was in the 40s the Rav HaRoshi of Tel Aviv Yafo. The Gemara says the following: a machloket, a difference of opinion between Rav and Shmuel. Omar Rav, lo ibri alma elo le David. The world was created only for David. Ushmuel Amar, Shmuel says the world was created l'Moshe, for Moshe. Pretty fascinating difference of opinion over here between giants of the Talmud, Rav and Shmuel. For whom was the world created? Was it created for David or Moshe? Two of our Ushpizin. And by the way, they've been together in the sukkah. Both of them have been together every night in the sukkah. Tonight is David's night. Rashi says over there, Rav Sofer, Rav holds that the world was created in the merit of David, because he was going to sing great songs of praise to God. And Shmuel holds that the world was created for Moshe, because he was the one who was going to receive Torah. I think we could have sort of guessed this ourselves, But it doesn't really help us too much in our understanding of the Machlokes. I don't understand, what would David have been if there was no Moshe who preceded him? So what's Rav saying? The world was created for David. Shmuel, the world was created for Moshe. In order to understand this, what we have to take a look at is a great Machlokes that in a sense nearly tore all of Klal Yisrael asunder. We have had in our history great Machlokes. I'm talking about the Machlokes between two giants, the Vilna Gaon and the Shnei Zalmin Miladim, the Baal HaTanya. The great Machlokes between Chassidim and the Snagdim. Or the great Machlokes between those who opposed what was beginning to develop in the world, something called Chassidut. By the way, it was a bitter struggle. A very, very bitter struggle. It tore apart families, communities, cities. It split the Jewish world in Europe. It was a terrible, terrible Machlokes. You know what the Chassidim were? They were really the reformers of their day. They were changing all sorts of things. You know, it's fascinating. 200 years after the Machlokes, Chassidus is mainstream. If you change anything from what Chassidim do, you're a goy gomer and you're a shaygetz. And they were the biggest changers, the biggest revolutionaries in 2,000 years of Jewish history. There was no greater dramatic change that took place. And it was a change that took place. They changed the Nusach HaTfilah from Ashkenaz. Everybody davened Ashkenaz. And there are so many people who daven Sfard now. Daven Sfard. Go ask a chosid, are you allowed to switch from Sfard to Ashkenaz? No. You're allowed to switch from Ashkenaz to Sfard, but you can't switch from Sfard to Ashkenaz. Ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he says, listen, from Sfard to Ashkenaz you can change because Ashkenaz was the original Nusach HaTfilah. But to go from Ashkenaz to Sfard, heaven forfend, it can't be. But you know, Chassidut became establishment. It took most probably 100 or more years, and there are still misnagdim who walk the face of this earth with great opposition to Chassidus. But the Machlokes is over. Chassidut is a fact. Much more than a fact. It's in great measure, so much of the strength of Klal Yisrael, of Chassidic communities all over. But it was 200 years ago, a terrible, terrible Machlokes tore the Jewish world apart. What was the Machlokes? We're not going to go into its full depth, but you can't look at it superficially. The Machlokes between Chassidim and the Snagdim wasn't simply that Al Shloshe Devarim HaOlamam, may the world stands on three things, Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Hasagim. So the Misnagdim said, the Ikar is Torah. And the Chassidim said, the Ikar is Avodah, davening, singing, you know, Hey Slavos, Bren, not like a cult of Misnagdim. You gotta be like a Vara Chassid. That was not the sum total of the Machlokes. The Machlokes went a bit deeper than that. The Machlokes went as far as what should be the stress? Should the stress in Yadud be on intellectual achievement? Mind? Malach? Or should stress be on lave, heart, emotion, feeling? There's no question about it that Chassidim were all for Torah. By the way, Baal HaTanya Rav Shneur Zalman wrote his great Shulchan Aruch only in order to prove to the Misnagdim that Chassidim are also observant Jews. But the machlokas was a matter of stress, and it made a lot of difference, that stress. I mean, that stress caused a great deal of stress by Klal Yisrael. The question is, what should the emphasis be on? Should the emphasis be on intellect and mind, or should it be heart and feeling? By the chosid, not only the performance of a mitzvah was important, but more than that, the preparation for a mitzvah. The chosid that you said before a mitzvah. The preparation for a mitzvah with the chilu, with fear and trembling. The Misnagdim wrote, of course, mockingly about Chassidim, that with all of their Yehirutzins and all of the rest, you understand, that Zugin Yehirutzins a whole night before the Seder, and by the time they get to eating the matzah, it's already tomorrow, you understand, and it's all over. But the fact is, there were the battle lines. That's where the struggle was. The struggle was, where do you place stress? Is it heart or mind? Intellect or physique? Were Rav Shneur Zalman Miladi and the Vilna Gaon the first ones who had this great machlokas? The machlokas between intellect and feeling? They were not the first. Go back a few hundred years before that, and you had two giants by Klal Yisrael. You had the Rambam, and you had Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. The Rambam was, of course, the man of great intellect. Moreh Nevuchim, the great philosopher. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was also a philosopher, but you know what kind of a philosopher? A poet philosopher. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the parts of Kinnis, the poetry that was written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, powerful, Libi the Mizrach, you understand, Baruchi the Sof Mar, of which a child hasn't learned that. I don't know if they've been teaching it in the last 30 years since I was a child, but who didn't know that when we were growing up, you know? Levi b'Mizrach, my heart is in the east, and I'm at the very end of it. Elitzion v'Arecho. Unbelievable, the poetry of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. He was a poet philosopher. In the Sefer HaKuzri, Kuzri and Moreh Nevuchim, Rambam, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. Rambam, all intellect. All mind, deep. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, intellect, but even the Kuzri in so many places, it reads like poetry. That great sefer of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, it reads like poetry. The ideas are like a song. He's singing a great song of the beauty of Klal Yisrael and Torah. What's the machlokas? The Rambam was intellect, mind. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was heart, feeling, chesh. Great machlokas. Did the machlokas start there? Did this machlokas maybe have its roots even earlier in Jewish history? So Rabbi Amiel says yes. It certainly did have its machlokas earlier in Jewish history. That was the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. For whom was the world created? For David or for Moshe? Our two mishpizim. Rav says that the world was created for David because he was going to sing songs of praise to God. He was going to be a man of great heart. Feeling, powerful emotion. Shmuel is the one who says that the world was created for Moshe, the man of great intellect. And by the way, what's very fascinating is both Rav and Shmuel themselves represent David and Moshe. Rav is the one that says that the world was created for David. Rav was a poetic soul. There are so many tefillos, prayers that we say that were composed by Rav. It's in the Gemara. Everybody remembers the Rosh Chodesh Benchen. At the end of Rosh Chodesh Benchen, it says, Bishchus Tfilas. So some Siddurim say, Bishchus Tfilas Rabin. It's really Tfilas Rav. Rav wrote that tefillah. There's a special tefillah, the Gemara in Brachos says, that it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if there's been a period when there was no rain, and then the rain started coming down, there's a tefillah to say, thanking God, I'll call Tipa V'Tipa. Every drop that came down. Every drop. It's a beautiful prayer. This came from the neshama of a Rav. There are even those who say that Umipnei Chatoenu was written by Rav. And anybody who can write the Umipnei Chatoenu, you understand, has to have a soul that is overflowing with a tremendous amount of feeling and emotion. So Rav says, the world was created for whom? For David. Because ultimately that's what Klal Yisrael needs. They need the depth and the power of David HaMelech's emotion, his feeling, to be able to express it. Anybody can express and feel everything and anything that's troubling them by going through Tillim. Tillim is awesome. There was a period of time that it had a bad name. A Jew who was not a great intellectual but would sit in shul and say Tillim was called out Tillim Yidl. You know, there was the Talmud Chochem, and then there's a Tillim Jew. Every Talmud Chochem should be a Tillim Jew. It's powerful, powerful emotion. Tillim is not something that you run to when there's a tzara. You have to say Tillim all the time. What was Shmuel? Shmuel is the one who says that the world was created for Moshe. You know what Shmuel was? You guessed it. Shmuel was the great intellectual. He was a scientist. Shmuel in the Gemara often is the one who tells us all sorts of halachas that are related to the movement of the heavenly bodies. He said about himself, Nehidinli shvili didikia kishvili dinehardoi. The street, the pathways, the byways of the heavens and all the galaxies are as clear to me as the streets of Neherdor. He lived in Neherdor in Bavel. That was, if we would know it, we could say as clear as the streets of Yerushalayim. I tell you, I always take a great deal of pride in the fact if I know what back alley to use to get out of the way of a big traffic jam and get all around it. And I think, fine, I was zeicha. It took me 26 years, but I learned in Yerushalayim. It's better than having learned Toronto. Long Island, I never learned. I could never figure out Long Island. I don't know how anybody lives there and how they get from one place to the next. I never. I failed on Long Island, so I came to Yerushalayim. Shmuel said, Nehidinli shvili didikia, clear are all the pathways of the heavens, just like shvili dinerdoi, like his hometown Nerdoi. So what was the machlokes Rabbi Shmuel? Feeling and intellect, Moach, Lev, David, Moshe, each one. Rav, who is the great man of emotion, is the one who sees the great contribution that was made by David to Neitzushbis. Shmuel was the man of great intellect, the great scientist. He is the one who was able to say that the world was created for David. Emotional sake. Good. They're all listening. They are all listening. The machlokes took place even before Rav and Shmuel. The machlokes took place between two giants called Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva. We all know the story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The city of Yerushalayim has been under siege for 3 years. The Romans are ready to destroy the city. And there's really no point anymore. There's no way that they will be able to save the city. And he is the one who is spirited out of the city in a coffin. By the way, one of the fascinating things in Rav Amiel mentions this, you know, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had a fascinating experience. He was able to hear the Hespedim during his lifetime. They took him out of the city so that he should be able to meet with Vespasian and in a sense hand over the city to him. Hand over the city to him. And then make absolutely no comparisons to present day situation. Jews could not hold Jerusalem. It was out of the question. There was no army, there were no provisions in the city. The city was dying from hunger. So what did he do? When given the opportunity, asked for something, he said, Ten li Yavna v'chachomel. Give me Yavna and her wise men. Vespasian must have thought that this Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, something's wrong with this Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He has a few batlonim in a place called Yavna, who are sitting in Kvetching, Abank, Epesiver, Agamura, and this is all that he asks for, Ten li Yavna v'chachomel. Little does Vespasian know and could never have guessed what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saw, that 2,000 years later you understand all that is left of Rome are some relics in Italy, and the Talmidei Chachamim, the Yavnei Chachamim, are growing all over the world. Rome is long gone, and Yavnei Chachamim. But he had great opposition. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had great opposition. No less a personage than Rabbi Akiva said about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you made a mistake. Meshiv Chachomim Ochor V'datom Yisakel. God turns back the wisdom of the wise and makes them foolish. You should have asked for Yerushalayim. You should have asked for Yerushalayim. Wherein lies the machlokas over here between Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the man of intellect. He's the Moshe. Klal Yisrael will survive only with those chachomim in Yavne. Then we have a future. That's when we're going to make it. He knew where the real strength of Klal Yisrael lies. We may survive without Yerushalayim and Bet HaMikdash, but we will never survive without Torah. Rabbi Akiva, somebody who is able to say Shema as he is being put to death, and to say Kol Yomai, my whole life I was waiting for this moment, and he can say Shema Yisrael with great kavana as the Romans are putting him to death. This is a neshama of great poetry. Rabbi Akiva needed Yerushalayim, he needed Beis HaMikdash, he needed Korbanos, he needed Kohen Gadol, Mare Kohen, all that makes up the neshama of Klal Yisrael, the heart of Klal Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Akiva needed. So therefore the machlokas between these two great men, Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai, and Rabbi Akiva, was the machlokas between intellect, mind, feeling, heart. Machlokas between Moshe and David. Did the machlokas begin there? Halt Cup, we have been tracing it from the Balatanya and the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Rambam and Rav Yehuda HaLevi, Rav and Shmuel. We're going backward historically, not intellectually. We're moving from Rav and Shmuel, we went to the Tanoim, the great Tanoim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva. But I have to say about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that he also felt what Rabbi Akiva felt. What did Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai do after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim razed to the ground? Gemara Rosh Hashanah tells us a whole list of enactments that he made as Zecher LeMikdash. Zecher LeMikdash, to remember the Beit HaMikdash. Tzion hi doden shein lo, we have to be able to remember Tzion. And a number of them, the reason was because Mehera Yibane HaMikdash. Mehera, speedily the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and if we don't remember these halachas, one of them is the fact that we take Lulav and Esrog 7 days, according to the Torah. You took Lulav and Esrog only 1 day. In the Beis HaMikdash it was 7 days. With the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, we would have ended up with 1 day taking Lulav and Esrog. And what would have happened if the first day Sukkot would be the Shabbos? We could go through a whole Yom Tov without a Lulav and Esrog. And if it happens 2-3 years in a row, who knows what would happen with our whole Lulav and Esrog. So he made a takana, Mehera Yibane HaMikdash. Speedily the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and we have to remember the mitzvah. So he was the one who enacted that Jews throughout the world should take Lulav and Esrog 7 days, as it was done previously only in the Beit HaMikdash. It once struck me, and I think it's not bad. What did he say? He told Vespasian Tenli Yavne v'chachomeho. Yavne. Listen to the word Yavne. And then he made all of these enactments because Mehera, next word, Yibane HaMikdash, Osios Yavne, Yibane, Yavne. Yavne, Yibane, to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you can read it whichever way you want, that he believed that Mehera Yibane HaMikdash Bishchus Yavne V'Chachomeha. Yavne V'Chachomeha, the great men of intellect need the neshama of Mehera Yibane HaMikdash. The difference of opinion goes back another generation. Generations. Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, Chizkiyahu the King of Yehuda, and Yeshayahu Hanavi. The Gemara says it, and Yeshayahu said it to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is the King of the Yehuda. The city was surrounded by the Sancheriv, King of Ashur. It was the last geographic location in all of Eretz Yisrael that was going to fall to Sancheriv. And the night before the attack, the angel of death swoops down upon the camp of Sancheriv, and they're all killed in a plague. And the Gemara says God wanted to make Chizkiyahu Moshiach, and Sancheriv would be the Gog and Magog who's supposed to attack Eretz Yisrael at the time of Moshiach. But you know why he wasn't Moshiach? Because he didn't. Chizkiyahu wasn't Moshiach because he didn't say Shida. He didn't say Shida. And you know what Chizkiyahu told Yeshayahu? Torah. The Torah that I learned will atone for not saying Shida. The Gemara says that in the days of Chizkiyahu, Bodku Midon Ba'Be'er Sheva, all of Eretz Yisrael, there wasn't a single man, woman, or child that were not experts in the most intricate laws of Halacha, of Tumah V'Tahara. Chizkiyahu was a teacher of Torah par excellence to an entire people. And Chizkiyahu said his Torah, is equal or greater than Shihahu. Yeshayahu disagreed. Chizkio, man of intellect, he's a Moshe. Yeshayahu, the prophet, that's a David. That's a David. Here though, Chizkio is the one who should have been the David. When Yeshayahu tells him, I think the greatest Bikur Cholum visit in history, Chizkio is taken ill, deathly ill, and in comes Yeshayahu and tells him, I've come to be Mavaka Chela, and his message is, Tomus Micholizer, you're going to die. That certainly is just what a sick person needs. I mean, this is quite an unusual Bikur Cholum, to which Chizkio responds to Gemara in Brachos Daf Yoreh on Aleph, to which Chizkio responds by saying, Yeshayahu, kach mikublani mi beis avi abba, from my Zayda's house, David. You know what I learned? Afilu cheret chadom unachas av sovaro shalom, even if there's a sharp knife that lies over one's neck, al nithya eish min harachanim, you never give up hope. And it says, Vayasev Chizkio, Ponorakir, Chizkio turned to the wall, he davened, and he did it. He did it. And he was able to tell Yeshayahu, what are you talking about? I'm going to die from this. I'm not going to die from this. Another 15 years were added to his life. But the fact is, in terms of his own personal makeup, he was a man of Torah. He was a man of intellect. Yeshayahu was the man of great and deep and powerful emotion. Yeshayahu is the poet. Read Yeshayahu. Read Yeshayahu. It's beautiful. And that's an understatement. This is going to help us understand the Gemara. And we're going to start coming to the point. There's a point to all of this. There's a point. There's a fascinating Gemara in Brachos where the Gemara says, Kishecholo, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai took ill, it seemed that it was going to be his final illness. His students came in and they all surrounded their great Rebbe. Kishecholo, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Nichnasi Talmid of the Bakr, this is going to be a different kind of Bikur Cholim. It's not going to be the Yeshayahu Chizkiyo. In come his students. When he saw them, he began to cry. His students said to him, Ner Yisrael, the light of Israel, Amud Hayimim, the right pillar, Patish HaChozov, the mighty hammer of the Jewish people. What are you crying about? I mean, they're really telling him there's Torah in the world only because of you. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you saved the Jewish people. So he said to them, would they be taking me before a king of flesh and blood? Who's here today, gone tomorrow? If he causes me pain, it's not eternal pain. Even if he puts me to death, it's not eternal death. I would be frightened and terrified now that I'm being taken before the Holy One, blessed be He. If He punishes me, it's an eternal punishment. And if He puts me to death, it's an eternal death. I shouldn't cry. And not only that, he says, there are two roads before me. One leading to Gan Eden, one leading to Gehenem, and I don't know which one they're taking me. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I don't know which road they're taking me on. And the last thing he says to his students is, Hochinu kisei l'chizkiyo melech Yehuda, prepare a chair for Chizkiyo, king of Yehuda. This is an awesome Gemara. The great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who had told Vespasian, Ten li Yavne de Chachomeha, give me Yavne, a wise man. He was also the one who was troubled his whole lifetime. Maybe I should have asked for Yerushalayim. Do you know the awesome position in which he finds himself? One man alone standing before Vespasian. You have your choice now. He can't call his cabinet together. He can't call Chachmei Yisrael together. There isn't a soul in the world who we can turn to, and he has to make the decision alone now. And he says, Ten li yachna v'chachma. Maybe Rabbi Akiva was right. Maybe it was because of me Yerushalayim was lost. Maybe I should have told Vespasian, leave Yerushalayim now. Don't destroy the city. A whole lifetime he doesn't know. He must have gotten up at times in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. Maybe I should have asked for Yerushalayim. He doesn't know. What's his defense going to be? Two possibilities. Achas Ganet and Achas Gehenet. Two possibilities. What's going to happen? So you know whom he wants? He wants Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. Because to know what Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda is going to say, he's going to be a character reference. He's going to say, do you know what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai did exactly what I did? I taught Torah to all of Klal Yisrael from Dan until Be'er Sheva. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael for all generation. He needs Chizkiyo with him. But that was the machlokes. That was machlokes between Yishayahu and Chizkiyahu, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva, Rav and Shmuel, the Chambam and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, and the Balatanya and the Vilna Gaon. So there were sharp, deep differences of opinion by the Jewish people. Very sharp, difficult ones. Some took years to be resolved. I think that most probably the machlokas between Chassidim and Misnagdim took at least 100 years. I'm assuming, of course, that it's over. I assume that it's over. It took more than 100 years, and it was bitter. It was very, very bitter. But when I take a look at all of the differences of opinion that we've listed up until now, you know what? There was something unusual and exceptional about it. They were able to agree to disagree. They were able to disagree agreeably. They were able to disagree and have great respect for the other's opinion. Because what we find in all of these differences of opinion is the great Mishnah. Kol machloket, shehi l'shem shamayim machloket, that's for the sake of heaven. Mishnah says, so for if kanyem, the end is, it will end up good. Kol machloket, the difference of opinion, that's not l'shem shamayim, is going to end in tragedy. And the Mishnah says, what's a machloket l'shem shamayim? The machloket between Hillel and Shammai. And what's the machloket? What is a machloket? Shalom l'shem shamayim, the machloket of Korach va'adosa. And there, of course, all the Mephoreshim say, it should have said the two sides, Korach va'adosa against Moshe. No, Moshe isn't mentioned. Moshe is not part of this, he's not part of this argument. He wants nothing to do with this machloket. Ultimately, the machlokes is going to be between the plotters to bring down Moshe, because they're really, each one has his own agenda. Well, you have a bunch of guys with their own agenda, but that's they're all going to destroy each other. Nobody has to lift a finger. The Bar Tanura, the Ovadili Bar Tanura, says a very beautiful word. And that's really the heart of what we're saying tonight. We're there. Ani Shambati, he says, I heard the meaning of the word sofar. Kol machloket shehi l'shem shamayim machloket, for the sake of heaven, sofar, the end is, it will be fulfilled, it will remain, says, you know what sofa means? The ultimate goal, and what is being sought in the machlokas, is going to be achieved. Listen carefully. A machlokas which is l'shem shamayim, hatachlis v'asof, the goal and the end hamavukash that is sought. May ota machlokas, from what do they want out of the machlokas? L'hasig, to achieve truth. Abaye and Ravi, Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, all of Shas, Tarni and Yerushalmi is based on the idea of machloket. Because it is through the machloket, the give and take, the disagreement, the agreeing, the arguing, is all part of the beauty and the vitality of Torah. When it's an argument l'shem shamayim, because an argument l'shem shamayim, both Abaye and Rava want the truth. It's not a question of victory. I won and you lost. I'm better and you're worse. A machloket l'shem shamayim means a machloket where there is a search for truth. Everybody wins at the end, because the ultimate is the truth is achieved. The Zemit Kayem, that will remain forever, because they have achieved the truth. As we see in the Machlokas of Hillel and Shammai. O Machlokas Shein Ol Shammayim, you know what the goal, the object, the point of a Machlokas Shein Ol Shammayim? Bakoshas Hasrora. One wants power, position, prominence, throw in a little money. Va'ahavat HaNitzuach, and the love of winning. I won. V'zeh HaSof, that end will never be fulfilled. They'll destroy themselves in the process. There has been a machlokas by Klal Yisrael for about the last 125 years. The machlokas is the machlokas over the Heter Mechira in Shemitah. Have we learned yet to look at it as a machloket l'shem shamayim? Do we see it as a machloket l'shem shamayim? Is there a search for truth? So I've been slightly disappointed, and I want to share my disappointment with you. I opened up a 479-page sefer on the laws of Shemitah. No less than that. I tell you, there was a period of time in Jewish history, after the Shulchan Aruch was written, and you had all the first of the Shulchan Aruch, but Shulchan Aruch takes up that much. So along came a Jew and made a kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and he took that whole Shulchan Aruch, one time. Then there was a great man who was a dayan in Vilna called Chayodom. All of Shulchan Aruch Arachayim in his Sefer Chayodom. And the other one, Yoredei, and other things went into his Sefer Chochmas Adam. By the way, they say he was brilliant. He was condensing the Shulchan Aruch. He didn't want anybody to condense his Sefer. He knew nobody would ever write a sefer Kitzur Chayei Adam. In our generation, you know what's become? Not Kitzur, but an explosion. Guy writes a 600-page sefer on Tzitzis. Tzitzis! Another 700 pages on Tefillin. Tefillas Kelim, the Sefer on Tefillas Kelim, on the immersion of Kelim. Every last Keli that exists in the world is listed there to tell you whether you have to title it or you don't have to title it. I'll tell you, you have to live 10 times Mr. Shelach to go through the Sefer. So here it is, Shemitah. 475, is that what I said? Something like that? Yeah, that's what I said. And then I saw one line, and I was profoundly saddened. Hamocher Sadehu Lagoi Lishnas Hashmita, somebody who sells his field to a goy for the Shemitah year, in parentheses, Al Pi Heter HaMechira Hayadua, according to the well-known Heter Mechira, Ein HaMechira Chalo. The sale is not valid. Now, there are loads of footnotes. I went looking through the footnotes. Will he at least mention someplace that there's another opinion? No. This is the age of the computer. You know what I mean? The amount of brilliant writing over the last 120 years to establish the fundamental halachic principles of the Heter Mechira is awesome. Beginning with Rabbi Yitzchok Ochanan and Rabbi Yoshua Mikutna, to Rav Kook's brilliant Sefer Shabbos Oretz. Rav Zevin wrote about it, that Sefer is an example of the greatest halachic writing of all. To Rav Shlomo Zalman, to Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, to Rav Yechiel Michal Tukhachinsky, Sefer Shmita, to Rav Avraham Shapira. What's been written? It doesn't exist, the Ritmir. Don't even say it's an overpin. You know what he did? The delete button. He deleted 120 years of great Jewish scholarship. It doesn't exist. So then all of these schnooks in this country, about 5 million or more Jews, that will only be able to survive because of the head of the career of sinners. Shomu Shamayim, how in heaven's name is a person so dishonest? And can he say that there's another opinion? Great people wrote the other opinion. It's a chutzpah of highest order. I think I'm nearly as upset as I was the first time that I saw this. I couldn't believe my eyes. You have to be honest. If you didn't want to put it in the text, put it in a footnote. And there are hundreds of Gaonim and Gedolim who say that the Mechira is valid. One of the English books, I don't want to mention where it's sold. It's a sefer that attempts to give you guidelines to Shemitah. How indeed do farmers manage? How indeed do farmers manage during Shemitah? This pointed question, this is the response. This pointed question is posed by the Torah itself. And if you shall say, what will we eat in the seventh year? Behold, we will not sow nor gather in our produce. Hashem replies with a promise of great blessing to those who observe Shemitah, as it says, and I shall command my blessing upon you in the sixth year, and it shall bring forth produce for 3 years. This is an enfer. The Chazon Ish himself said that this blessing of the sixth year does not apply in our time because Shemitah is not min haTorah today. The only time the blessing indeed took place is when there's Shemitah min haTorah. It's a lie. The man says a lie. And then we go to talks and tales. Countless stories have been related about the miraculous abundance of crops that were experienced by observant farmers who courageously abstained from working their fields during Shemitah. This in contrast to non-observant farmers who worked as usual during Shemitah only to find that their crops failed. You ever heard any such stories? I didn't hear such stories. The only thing that I know about farmers that didn't work their fields in Shemitah is that money was raised for them all over the world. That's fine. Proving nothing is gained by flouting the mitzvahs of the Torah. Now comes the, we got to come to an end. Doesn't the Israeli rabbinate sell the land to a Gentile? Question. Answer. At the turn of the 20th century, when Torah observant farmers in Eretz Yisrael were small and not well established, many people felt that keeping the laws of Shemitah could present a life-threatening situation. As a temporary emergency measure, several great rabbanim. Listen, you hear that? That was very good. He gets points for this. Several great rabbanim committed selling farms to a Gentile, thereby creating the possibility to allow certain types of work during Shemitah. The sale was subject to many conditions and severe restrictions, and by no means allowed agriculture to continue as usual in the seventh year. Now listen to this. After the establishment of the state of Israel, the rabbinate decided to extend the scope of the sale, loosening the conditions and restrictions, and permitting work to continue as usual during Shemitah. Number one, it's a lie. Number two, you know what this person, as the previous guy did, with one stroke of the pen, they said Lashon Hara on most of Klal Yisrael, terrible Lashon Hara on most of Klal Yisrael, trampled the Torah that was written by countless Gedolei Yisrael, and this is supposed to be a fruitful book. You know what? He had an opportunity. He had a great opportunity to say, it is a machlokes, there are differences of opinion. And then he has a right to say, as he says at the end, that we follow the Chazon Ish, the Briskogov, the Chivino. That's legitimate, you have a right to do that. But you cannot delegitimate 5,100,000 Jews living in Eretz Yisrael and do it with the stroke of a pen and think you aren't speaking Lashon Hara and Chilus and the Vasa Talmid Echad totally. I hope there's nobody on our side that does anything as ugly as that. I've been profoundly influenced over the last few months. I've been reading the Sefer HaShemitah, studying, learning the Sefer HaShemitah of Rabbi Yechiel Michaltik Kaczynski, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim of Yerushalayim, the one who wrote the Gesher HaChayim, the ultimate Sefer on Hilchos Avelos, a Tzadik Yisod Olam. He was asked yet at the turn of the century, the last century, he was asked by Rav Shmuel Salam to write a Sefer on Hilchos Shemitah. Half the Sefer is Hilchos Shemitah, and the second half of the Sefer is Hetah Mechira. It's the beauty, the grace, and the majesty with which he describes and he uses the term Machloket L'Shem Shemayim. He brings all the position of the Matirim, those who commit it, those who oppose it. Then he brings again the Matirim. But at the end, comes down squarely 100% in favor of that Mechira. You know what the point of this whole Shia was? We have to learn how to disagree and disagree with dignity. We have to learn how to engage in machlokes, l'shem shemayim, argument for the sake of heaven. Because you know what I think is going on? Not argument for the sake of heaven, but argument for heaven's sake. That's what's going on. And that's tragic. At the end of the day, they know, the Badats and the Eidat Charedis, all of them who don't hold of the Hetah Mechira, they know, and they're justified, I mean, in their position, the Bakashan. But they know there's no way in the world that they will ever feed 5,300,000 Jews. No way. It's not a solution for Klal Yisrael. By the way, I signed up for Otsar Haaretz. Otsar Haaretz also knows they have no way in the world that they're going to feed from Matzah Menutak and Chamamot and Drom Arava. They're going to run out by the time Pesach rolls around, they're going to run out and out of food, and it'll be a matter of either using Hetah Mechira or bringing in from Europe. That's not how Klal Yisrael is supposed to live in its country. We have to provide our basic needs for ourselves. 2 million tons a year of fruits and vegetables are grown here in this country. It's a basic and fundamental part of the whole economy. Should we be dependent on our basic foodstuffs and goyim all around us? Heaven forfend, it can't be. The Hetah Mechira is an absolute necessity for Klal Yisrael. You want to take care of yourself? Bevakasha. But don't simply wipe me out of existence as though we're all a bunch of sinners? Hechtem mechira lo chalor. Doesn't help. Doesn't work. The rabbis have permitted everything. Shmitas. I went through the instructions from the Rabbanut HaRashid to the farmers. Oh, are there instructions there, what they may do, what they may not do. The only thing that has changed dramatically since 1952, when Rabbi Yechiel Michal Tikhachinsky wrote the Sefer HaShemitah, he said, you know, that there are certain malachas that must be done in the field by non-Jews. There weren't any non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael in 52. There weren't. So he said, since the situation is such that we're surrounded by enemies, we need food, then the Hetem Mechira permits even doing other malachas by Jews. What would he have said when we have about 50,000 Thailandians today? Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are doing the Iker Malacha in the field in the Shemitah. The rest is done by Jews. We haven't learned how to conduct a machloket l'shem shamayim. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Akiva did know. Rav and Shmuel did know. David and Moshe did know. We haven't learned the meaning of machloket l'shem shamayim. And I'll tell you, as long as that's so, we're going to be in big trouble. We're going to be in big trouble. I don't know yet what the day by day is going to bring. I hold that the challenge of Shemitah in our day, not only to get through the year, but to get through the year with peace, to get through it with dignity, to get through the year without sinner and kinna and machlekes, that we should know that both sides are interested in the truth. That's what's important. And if we fail there, the whole Shemitah year is an absolute waste. God cries tears over that kind of a Shemitah year. In order to maintain my cool and end the shiur on an upbeat note, I'm not going to deal with the great moral and ethical question of whether one should eat produce that is bought with a lot of money from terrorists who surround us. One of the most ugly things that I can imagine. I'm not going to say a word about it. I don't understand it, right? So, as long as I can have Otsar Haaretz, I'll have Otsar Haaretz. I respect those who do whatever they wanted to do, even though I have great questions on them. But I'm not going to make peace with the tyranny that is taking place in Yerushalayim and other cities. There's a tyranny taking place, and it can't be. There's no way that anybody is going to provide for this great Jewish community in this country without Hetem Mechira. It's needed now most probably more than it was ever needed before. The important thing is to learn how to disagree. And remember the Rav, the Bar Tanura, can only happen if both sides are striving for truth. Then everybody's going to win. But if there are other motives, it's going to be a problem. There are no other motives. Mo'adim l'simcha, chagim l'zmanim l'sason. Piska tovot, everybody.